Welcome to Languages and Books, the podcast for language learners, language enthusiasts, language fanatics, and even book lovers. My name is Abisola Akimbola, and I am your host on this show. Annyeonghaseyo is the Korean way of saying hello. And yes, you guessed right. My guest today on Languages and Books speaks Korean, and her name is Motelani Ogusoya, also known as Mo Sibyl. Motelani describes herself as a Nigerian-born, Korean-speaking, and wandering intellectual. A unique perspective is derived from my experience growing up in Nigeria to now living in the U.S., learning and speaking Korean, and enriched by the adventures her travels have brought on. She's also an assistant professor of pharmacy with a PhD degree in health economics and outcomes research. She also conducts research in cancer and lupus outcomes and quality of life. She's the podcast host of the More Sibyl podcast. Motelani speaks Korean, English, Yoruba, and a bit of French. And in today's episode, we are going to talk about how Motelani learned the Korean language. Hello, Mo. Is it okay if I call you Mo?
That's okay. 안녕하세요, 부서라.
안녕하세요. I hope I got that correctly. and books. Are you excited to be on the show?
Super excited. I mean, my friends know that there's like a few things that really get me excited. Well, a lot of things get me excited, but one of them is my love for Korean language and culture. So yes, I am very excited, even though it's a Monday morning.
Oh, okay.
And thanks for having me on your show.
Okay, thank you. Great. So let's just get right into the conversation. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, why did you decide to learn Korean language?
It's a long story, but I'll try to keep it short. So I've always had a thing for languages. I spent about 7 years learning French while I was in Nigeria. And I think the ability to be able to express yourself in another language was just something that blew my mind. And so when I meet people and I guess from their last names where they're from, I always try to like find a little bit more about their culture. And I was that kid who digested a lot of encyclopedias because I love to know more about the world. So like TV shows like Children of the World is Mrs. Steinkamp. One of my favorite things to watch as a kid, because you get to learn more about culture, even go get Africa with Inek and her husband. So yes, so culture was that big part of my life. Okay. And so when I moved to the US and after getting my PhD, I had this transition in between because I was on a student visa and I was trying to convert to my H-1B then. And so I couldn't do anything. I had to stay at home and I hate being bored. Like I'm someone like if I don't have anything to do and I'm like bored and without any purpose, I get very depressed. So, for real, I had gone to see my husband then. He was doing his residency in New Mexico. And I remember going to bed that night. It was sometime in January.
Okay.
And I got a message from Coursera. I had taken some courses on Coursera, on negotiation, communication, nothing on language, you know. And I got Learn Korean 101. And I remember with my eyes, it's a loser that can only learn languages online. If you want to learn a language, go to a proper school. Yeah. Or go to the country and immerse yourself. I said, okay, what's the big deal? Let me check. I clicked on the link and it opened to the course.
Okay.
And as I was scrolling through my phone, I realized, this one too. I need to get my laptop out. And we saw that 1 hour later, I had learned the characters.
Wow.
And I think for the first time, because before then, I had tried to at least give the Korean language chance of learning. But the way it was taught was just almost like you just had to memorize the characters. And my brain is so stubborn. Like, you have to give me the first principles. Why are those characters formed? Like, what's the story behind it?
Yeah.
And so I can't just cram stuff. I want to know. So I used to get in trouble a lot as a child because I would always ask questions and what they wanted to ask. But this particular course, which was designed by Yonsei University, which is one of the biggest universities and most prominent universities in Korea, they started from the philosophy, you know, the Confucian principles of the standing man, the sun and the earth, and how the letters were formed, and how King Sejong, who was like the kings that actually formed the language with his team, how he wanted to make it very easy for the poor people to learn. And so it blew my mind and I could see it in my mind. So after that 1 hour, I went to bed and I felt like, you know, like that little child for whom Christmas came very early for. And I woke up the next morning, I was like, you know, you did something last night, but like,
yeah,
it was a dream, right? And I went on Google and I just, you know, said Korean words and I could pronounce all of them, even though I didn't know what they meant. And so that was how the journey started. And I can get very addictive about stuff that I like. I'd be obsessive. Okay, actually obsessive. And so for the first 6, I knocked out the beginner's phase because I was just learning more and more, doing a lot of self-studying. And the course that was on Coursera, it was built in such a way that by the time you're done, you could like order food in a restaurant, go shopping by yourself, you know, talk about how to book a flight and things like that. They're really very situation specific. Yeah, so that's how I learned Korean. And that's how it began for me.
Wow. You've already answered the second question because I was about to ask, how did you learn it? So can you talk about like your language learning routine? Like, you know, after stumbling on it on Coursera, did you have to, you know, practice maybe with a friend? Or what was your routine? Did you have a routine? Let's even start with that.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. And before I talk about that, I should also acknowledge the fact that my entrance to Korea wasn't just because, you know, I got that email. I actually had a roommate. We did an internship together in Boston.
Okay.
And every morning she would have like hot rice ready. And even when we come back from work at, in the evening, there was always hot rice ready. Okay. And I looked at her like, you're skinny, you eat rice every day. How can you be this skinny? Show me your ways. And apparently in Korea, they eat a lot of rice, but it's not like the way we eat it in Nigeria, like in Basia homes, you know. And the more we started talking about just our cultures, I realized that, wow, we have so much similarities. But if we were to look at us phenotypically, you wouldn't guess. You just think, oh, she's Korean, she's Nigerian. But the more we talked about our values, and especially her mom and my mom, you could think, you just think that there were twins that were separated at birth because of things they did and all that kind of stuff. So yes, Chan Hyun was my former roommate. She really helped me to answer a lot of questions I had. But then I didn't think I was going to learn the language until that happened 3 years later. So back to your question about routines. I think it depends on what kind of person you are. You have to know what your learning style is. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm a very voracious reader. I'm highly curious about things around me. So one of the things that I did was I separated myself and I just focused on the courses that was on Coursera because that course was very well structured. Okay. So all the assignments they gave us, I did all of them. And I won't lie to you, there were some words I had to memorize because at that time, because it was beginners, when breaking everything down, particular one is Manasa Bangawayo. I remember just having to repeat that many, many times. And that really means I'm glad to have met you. Like meeting you makes me glad. Okay. And I remember, what is Manasa Bangawayo? You don't care. What does that mean? What does that mean? And I couldn't get it until much later when I started learning in the intermediate level, I could break it down and how that words were, you know, conjugated. So a lot of it was self-taught. I had a book and a pen. And during my break at work, I would, you know, start studying. I had little stickers, sticky notes. They're still in my office and around my, you know, in my office at home and my office at work. I had little sticky notes that I just, you know, put everywhere of the words of, you know, time, how to tell time, how to, you know, tell hours, distances, and the counters that they use in the language. And so that was for me. But then if you know what language really is about, there's the input and the output part of it.
Yeah.
So input, you know, when you're things you're taking in, output is what you're, you know, giving out in the world. So for the input portion of it, like reading and listening, I was really good at that because I was
putting in the effort.
Was putting in the effort. Yeah. But then there was something broken down because when I started meeting Koreans and I wanted to say something back to them, I had to imagine how the words were spelled out before I could say it. So my speaking was really staggered.
Slow.
I could read very well. I could, you know, type very well. But then when it was time for me to talk, I felt like a fraud because all along, I was studying in a vacuum. I had no another person to like bounce the conversation off with. So I realized that.
What about your roommate?
Well, that was 2014, remember? And this was 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
I'm just saying maybe chatting with or calling.
No. I mean, okay. I was still chat, but then it wasn't like being, like going to a school and, you know, so I was trying to pick up what I did next.
Okay.
So I found a Korean language school here in Oklahoma where I live. And I started going there and that really blew my game because in the class, we had people from all levels.
Wow.
You know, the beginners, the BTS fans who just, you know, they love Korea because of, you know, K-pop. And there's nothing really wrong with that. And then the ones that were advanced had gone to Korea to like learn, just teach English. And so it really helped me too. And I was smack dab somewhere in the middle, no longer a beginner, but definitely not advanced. So I could see how the beginners, their struggles, how I could help them. And then I could learn a lot from the advanced. And so I did that for about 2.5 years. I mean, the school kind of closed recently because of, you know, COVID and all
COVID?
That.
Okay.
But that was it, you know. And I became intermediate enough that I could start teaching, like legally, like for real teaching the beginner's class. So, yeah. So for those that are struggling is while it's good to learn on your own, language is something that you need somebody to like, you know, feed it off of. And it doesn't have to be like a native person that from there, but someone that is at least proficient in the language. Because I find that for a lot of my Korean friends, when I ask them questions about why is this like that, they don't even really know how to respond.
They don't know,
They can speak the language and that's it. But for someone that has just learned it, and especially people with the kind of brains that I have, they're able to like respond to my questions.
Okay, so did you face any challenges? Like, what were your biggest challenges while learning, you know, Korean language? Or was it just a smooth ride? You didn't face any challenge.
So I talk about being like an obsessive learner. I mean, there's only so much for you can like push yourself. At a point, I really started feeling discouraged because one, I felt like a fraud about it. I'm Nigerian. I haven't even learned all of Yoruba words. I don't know how to speak Igbo. And then you're running to Korea. Are your ancestors from there? Like, how do you explain to people like you love Korea? Like, it didn't make sense. And even though my friends, they found it weird, but you know, it's more now. More that person, I'm going to learn horse riding or going to learn how to shoot in the jungle. So, like, they just took it like, okay, this is one of her, you know, exploring faces. Let's leave her. But then it started going deeper and deeper. And I was like, she's really stressed about this. So,
this thing,
and I remember my 30th birthday, they made it like, they threw me like a surprise party. I got a Korean clock that the time is in Korean. So I live right now, I have it in my living room, and the time is, you know, Korean time. And so I know the time difference between I live in Korea. My cake was shipped, you know, in the form of Korean Airways. Even though they don't really get my madness about it. Yes, really, for real. It was blue, it was red, and it was white, and it had Korean Airways and, you know, like, you know, flying to Korea.
Wow.
So that was that. And then also, like, feeling like, you know, because I was very passionate about it. Because for me, learning Korean wasn't just because I wanted to. I'm not like a K-pop fan. I like some of the songs, but I'm not like a K-pop
fan. What about K-drama?
I like K-dramas, but I like a lot of K-music, really. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I try the old ones and the seasoned, you know. I feel like it's more like an age thing for me. Like, while I like some BTS songs, I won't call myself an ARMY fan because, you know, it's just, I think I'm too old for that. But I love the music. I love the drama. And when I started learning about the history, because I'm a history buff as well, especially the economic development, and I compare and contrast that with, you know, Nigeria, because if you know about the history of Korea and how they were able to get out of that oppression they were in and use all they had, fine, they were heavily funded by the U.S. and the UN, the United Nations Marshall Funds to kind of help them get rid of, you know, communism and, you know, be more capitalistic. And a lot can be said against that. But I look at how Korea has developed itself to not be one of the powerhouses in the world. And those are the things that I think about Nigeria. Like, you know, it's really possible because Korea used to be on the recipient list for UN aids and donors. And they're one of the few countries to have left that list, not just even prospering enough, but now becoming on the donor list. Now the gift to countries. Nigeria has never left that status. So a lot of things about Korea, you know, makes me really hopeful about Nigeria. And I wrote a piece on Medium about, you know, a tale of two countries, South Korea and Nigeria. And it's had thousands and thousands of views. It's one of my most, you know, read articles on Medium.
Wow.
So things like that. But then inside me, I still struggled with being like a fraud, you know, because I would...
Even with all this knowledge, you still struggled?
I still struggled, yes. Wow. I still struggled because I felt like, you know, I wasn't being real enough. Like, I was being fake, you know, and then being of dark skin. Like, you know, how do you explain to people? But guess what helped me? My Korean friends. They're like, more like, I have never met anybody like you. It seems like you even know a lot about our country, because I will be telling them about their history and they'll be like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, I guess, okay. And so they're like, you know, we love that you love our country and we love the glow you have when you talk about our country. And they started helping me out. In fact, I still use a couple of them for my, you know, speaking practice, because now I'm stuck in the upper intermediate level where it's a little bit dense. You're trying to like learn more stuff. And then that was it. And they gave me a name. I have a Korean name, which is Minyoung. It means someone that is bright and dazzling. One of my Korean sisters gave that to me. And wow. So I think plugging myself into that community, it really helped, because I was able to open up to them. Like, I feel somehow just being this stick in the mud, trying to like be passionate about Korean and all that kind of stuff. And they're like, no, you're good. Like, we love that about you. Anyone struggling, like, find someone from that country and ask them questions.
Yeah.
And that open up cultural curiosity. Yes. I think feeling fraudulent about a language you're learning that's beyond the languages that you're used. I learned French for about 7 years. And that's really smack dab under the Romance languages. So if I had to learn Spanish or Italian, it's not really like a huge shift. But I'm moving from Yoruba English all the way to Korea. Like, yeah. What way, sister? You know. So yes, I highly encourage it. You know, I still a little bit struggle about it, but not like before. So that was the first struggle. And the second one was at a point I felt like, because I was studying alone, I started losing the enthusiasm. And I knew that I wanted to do more with this, because I'm someone that when I do stuff, I like to have closure. And I like to like see it to the very end, whatever the... you know, natural termination would be like. But I remember there was this video I watched on YouTube, or was it on Facebook, of a Nigerian young girl, I forget her name, but apparently she watched so much dramas that she could recite words and, you know, okay, Talk about stuff. I thought to myself, this girl, there's some people that are like that, they learn by hearing. I'm not that. My brain is very scientific. You got to break it down for me.
Break it down, yeah.
This girl can do it. And that was a turning point in my life. And you know, it's been 3 years now. I study Korean every day. Every day I study Korean.
Every single day.
Every single day I studied Korean. So I remember the times I missed was when I was really sick and I was hospitalized earlier this year because I couldn't, you know, use my computer and all that kind of stuff. But I studied Korean every day, even just like an hour or a like few minutes through the drama. And I pick out words and then, you know, focus on it. Wow. I even text my friends, you know, I have Kakao Talk. I have Korean keyboards everywhere. My work laptop, my home laptop, my podcast laptop, my phones, I have Korean keyboards. And I type in Korean and I get that feedback and stuff from my friends. So yes, that's why I like Korean. And that's how I was able to get over the challenges.
Okay. So let's just talk about the best thing you've enjoyed from your ability to speak and understand Korean. Now, this is where you get to share some of the things you've, you know, just enjoyed by your ability to speak the language.
People tell you that, well, the older you get, the harder it is. Like, usually the age 8 is when the language learning part of your brain is fused. I don't believe that story. As a matter of fact, the older you get, the more you should adopt something that is different from you. Because studies have shown, scientific studies have shown, I'm going to go a little bit professor right now, that learning a new language can help to, you know, stave away, you know, cognitive declines like Alzheimer's and dementia and other forms of dementia. So that's one. If this is what I'm doing right now, who knows, maybe down the line, I might pick up Japanese again and maybe Mandarin Chinese and start learning. So language learning is always going to be it for me. Help my brain to not get declined as time goes on. Then that's good. That's one. And I think, too, is that it was a good challenge. I was at that point in my life where I felt like I've reached the point of my educational pursuits, you know, having a PhD. And it was like, so what next? Because I'm always that person that wants to know what next. Okay, I've done this, what next? And so having to go back to Korean, I think it really helped me in so many ways. And I would say something that might sound a bit cheesy. That ability to master the Korean language, it has fed into other areas of my life and have you know, consequently increased my productivity and my self-efficacy. There are almost no problems I feel like I cannot solve if I apply myself to it or I reach out for help. That's what Korean learning has taught me. Because even though, you know, I'm making it sound glossy, sometimes I was a little bit embarrassed because I felt like I didn't say the words very well, or I sound like a little kindergartner, like trying to pronounce words. But then this is where my friends, you know, helped me and be like, it's fine. You know, you don't have to learn how to, there's some words I can't really pronounce very well because my Yoruba tongue is not rolling. So there's a particular word, cook, like, you know, make sure, cook, hasaya, like, so it's the double key, and then okay, like, that's how you romanize it. But I can't really say it very well. Even the, like, the, there's an R word, but it's not quite R. It's called real, like Ramyeon. But I really can't roll the R very well, like a natural Korean speaker would. So I still have a lot of struggles with that word and, you know, some sentences I can't really say very well. But apart from that, bringing out the child in you, because as a child growing up, you really don't remember how you were struggling when you were speaking. Only your family members will tell you how you sounded like a child.
Yeah.
And
you
think, this time around, I could see that child in me. And there's something about learning, almost like you've unlocked another key to the universe. Like it's a new puzzle the universe is giving you, trying to solve it. Like you have new eyes to see things.
Yeah.
And that childlike curiosity, even my friends would tell me, when I speak Korean, I tend to be a little bit tender. When I'm talking to my friends, like you are speaking in Yoruba, my Korean friends, like, well, you guys fight? I'm like, no, I just talking. Because you know how we shout on the phone now. When I'm speaking Korean, because there's a way I carry myself, maybe just because I don't want to make a mistake and I'm still trying to like my words, I'm more tender, I'm more gentle. So it's that concept of emotional and analytical language. Another thing is that I've learned the language so much that I can get the jokes when they try to make puns. And that blew me away. One of my Korean friends, Sylvia Mujonga, she was like, no, did you realize that you just got this joke that is... Because it's a joke that was kind of apparently making its way around in Korea. And she shared it with me and I started laughing. I almost fell off my chair. And she was like,
you got it.
I'm like, yeah. So I explained it to her. She was like, Mo, do you know that this means that you are actually really good? You're not giving yourself enough credit. So yeah, I think when you get to the point where you can learn, you can understand the languages. Because
the jokes and all that.
English is good. I'm not going to bastardize English. English has given a lot of us opportunities to communicate to people around the world.
Yeah.
But it lacks, when it comes to like translating stuff back, it lacks, like, how do you translate law? Even think about it as a Yoruba speaker. If you're trying to explain a joke or an adage from Yoruba to English.
English is always difficult.
Dabi, exactly.
Kole dabi lai lai.
Kole dabi as at all. So think of that like in the Korean sense of the word. Like there's some words that, you're like so take for example, Nunchi Om Nun Saram. It means somebody into Mojuto Mora. How do you explain that in English? That Mojuto Mora, as a Yoruba person, I could understand it. But then in English, like, is it somebody that is not aware? It's more than that. Oh, Lojo Mora, oh, she, oh, tie, oh, oh, yeah. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I use that word a lot. You know? And then my friends, me and I, we'll just look at ourselves and we'll start laughing because we were trying to gossip about somebody else. So yes, that ability to see the world in a different place And I think also, I don't even know, there's so many things that...
So many things you've enjoyed just by your ability to speak.
It is. I feel like I have access to the culture, you know. I can explain things to people around me while they do that. Another thing is that when I go to the restaurant and I go in there, anyone can say Anyang Haseyo, like, right? Because, you know, you can go on Google, it tells you hello means Anyang Haseyo.
Should I tell you what Google gave me? It's because I'm a language person. I had to use my research skills well. Google said, Yobeseyo or something like that.
Yobeseyo? That's what
Google gave me. And then I did, you know, some in-depth research and I found out that, that's when you're speaking on the phone. So that was when I found Anyang Haseyo. And I listened to, you know, the pronunciation all over again. And I'm like, God.
That's the thing with Google. Yeah, Papago is actually better. Papago is by Naver, which is one of the big...
What do you call it?
Papago. P-A-P-A-G-O.
Okay.
It's by Naver. And it's the syntax is a lot better. You know, I try to do a lot of back translations and stuff with Korean when I'm learning. Well, because I have those apps on my phone and I find that Papago is more accurate. I mean, Google is not bad. I mean, Google has a lot more advanced tools. And I think Papago is trying to catch up. But as far as the translation, quality of translation, I prefer Papago.
Let's talk about apps now. Like, are they effective? And, you know, if they are, let's talk about language learning apps now. And if they are effective, can you recommend, like, maybe 3 apps that you use? And this is just for anyone that, you know, is listening and would like to learn Korean. Yes.
Okay, so I just mentioned Papago by Naver. That's also very good.
Yeah.
Because give you context, not just, you know how sometimes these translation apps, you just translate it without looking at the syntax or the context.
Yeah.
Papago is very good for that. And then you can also switch out, if you want it to be honorific, because in Korean, there are many levels of words. You know, if I'm talking to someone that's older than me, someone that is younger than me, someone that is more senior and way advanced than me, there's some words I have to use. Kind of like in Yoruba, Oshé versus Eshé.
Yes, Eshé, you know? Yes.
So like that.
Even in French, we have that Etoi, Evu, Kadevu.
Exactly. And then in Korea, take for example, when you think about even that same Anyang Haseyo, they are saying that there's, you know, Anyang Hashimika, which is like the highest level. And then Anyang,
it's not just
like,
anybody I can tell Anyang Haseyo.
Anyang Haseyo is good. I mean, when I learned Korean, I learned that at the yo-yo ending level because it's not too formal, it's not too informal. It's just not that good. So I learned to speak very respectful, not super respectfully, but respectfully. So when I started talking to my students who I was older, and according to them, my status in life is higher than theirs, they'll tell me, Mo, please, you know, speak a little bit lower. Like, you're talking too high to us. And I told them, it's hard for me to convey because I'm just used to being like you know, talking at the yo ending level.
Okay.
And so Papago is one.
Okay.
The second one that I use will be, and I played a lot of games because me, I like to play a lot. So using games to kind of reinforce what I studied really helped. So Memrise is one that I really used a lot.
Okay.
Memrise has up to like 7 levels, but there's some packages you can download. And one of the ones that I highly super recommend is from Talk To Me in Korean.
Okay.
So Kim Hoon Eun and Hyung Woo Park, they're good. They're very good. They've been doing this for like 10 years. I have bought a lot of their books from Korea. And they ship all over the world. Now shipping fees might be cost prohibitive, but I highly recommend them. And while you're still studying on Memrise, they have a podcast you can listen to that is associated with the stuff you're learning. And they provide a lot of context and they go straight to the point. So I started with, you know, level one, episode one, and now I'm on level 7 and it ends at level 8. So you can tell that this really helped me a lot to, like, you know, learn. So when I'm driving to work, rather than just cussing anybody out, road rage, I just listen to the podcast. And that really helps, you know. So that's one. That's another one. And I think the third one, this depends. I have done Duolingo, but I find that Duolingo is not really very good for Korean.
Okay.
They introduced their Korean app, like, I think 2017 or so. And I knocked it out, in a month or two. But it's not very in-depth.
Okay.
And of course, you know, you can also try QuizUp. QuizUp has a lot of questions. You know, if you just type in Korean, the questions about the dramas, the culture, the songs. Yeah. And then also the dramas. Never forget that. If you use Viki is like an app to watch a lot of Korean dramas.
Okay. Viki.
If you are watching
Viki. Okay.
Viki. If you are using a computer or a tablet, they have like a language mode in a way that you can pause. If you pause it, it has the English translation, but then it has a Korean on top.
Okay. So we mentioned Papago, Memrise. Yeah. Vicky, and quiz what?
Quiz up. Quiz Q-U-I-Z and then U-P.
Okay, quiz up. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, so back to Vicky. Make sure when you click on the word, it gives you like the meaning and the context of yours. The other thing I do right now when I'm listening to Korean drama, even when there's no subtitle, I know up to 70 to 80% of the things they're saying.
Wow.
So I think the more you keep watching the drama, if you're into drama or whatever music you're into, you just never understand how much your brain is speaking from those dramas. Never underestimate that. So yeah, those are some of the things. I have a lot more, but you said, you know, top three, but
yeah,
I highly recommend top three in Korean. It's really, really good.
Okay. All right. So if you are given an opportunity to learn Korean again, what will you do differently?
I'll do everything again, the same way.
Maybe the same way.
I'll quit my job and move to Korea.
Yes, that reminds me. So before the last time we spoke, you mentioned that you were going to visit Korea after the pandemic and after the lockdown is over. So is that still?
Oh yeah, I think I told you, we actually booked our flight for July and all of that. But then Korea, like most of the other parts of the world, required to quarantine for 2 weeks. And then our trip was going to be for 2 weeks. I was supposed to go, my husband and myself, whom I had to finally convince that Korea was a good idea to go to. He doesn't care much about my fangirling and all of the crazy things I do, but he respects it and he likes that about me. And I sometimes like catch him listening to his friend. My wife speaks Korean.
Oh, that's
and
so cute.
Yeah, he has this glimmer on his face, but he wouldn't necessarily follow me he's followed me to my language school, but he went to take the Spanish class because he speaks a bit of Spanish. Okay. So we're waiting until they no longer require a 2 weeks quarantine. Trust me, it's on my to-do list because, you know, we had to, Delta canceled our flight, we got the
vaccine. And I can't wait for you to share the pictures on, you know, on Instagram and, you know, just
prepare. My first time, I don't want to come back. You know.
Wow. Yeah. So for anyone who wants to learn Korean language, for somebody listening, do you have any tips for that person?
Number one, change the settings on your phone. Switch it from English to Korea. If you are really
that immediately, yes. Your laptop, all your devices.
Yeah, switch it to Korean. It's scary. It feels like you don't know your phone. You probably want to throw it away. Then download some keyboards. I use Android, and I know Swift Key is also available on the Apple. So Swift is SWIFTKEY.
Okay.
And they have English packages, they have French, they have Korean, they have Yoruba, actually, as a matter of fact. They have Igbo and Hausa.
Wow.
So I type in all those languages. I type in English, French, and, you know, Yoruba and Korean. So it has, you can just, it's a matter of just, you know, to flip, like, what's the word? Pressing the button, like sliding across the space bar to switch out the language you're typing in.
Language you're typing in, okay.
That's one. And then two, remember your whys. Fine. What I was trying to make a joke about, you know, Army and BTS fans, those things will come and go. So I used to, like, when new students would come to our class in our Korean school, then the language school I was going to, you can always tell 7, 8 out of 10 of them was because of BTS, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But give them like 2, 3, they don't come back again.
Wow.
Because you realize that it's a lot of work. While it's okay for BTS and songs and all that to be like your window into Korea, I hope that you can grab onto something more substantial, like your wife. For me, you know, people come sometimes, I've had people say, you're just a Korean boo. I don't even try to argue anymore. If that's how
the most Koreanophile.
Korean boo, you know, I'm like, whatever, you know. For me, it's deeper than that. There's a spiritual component to it. Like, it's almost like a second culture. And I found a home outside of Nigeria that I can call home.
Yeah.
In the people, in the culture, in the similarities.
Yes.
There's so many similarities between Nigerian culture. And when I say Nigerian culture, I know it's very heterogeneous. So permit me to be a little bit generalistic with that word. We have that pride of our nation. Nigerians are a set of proud people. Let's be very honest.
Yes.
We're trying to show. Now, Koreans might not be that ostentatious about their culture, but they're very proud about their, you know, heritage. If you look at the history, how they were suppressed by the Japanese during the imperial times, they couldn't even use their last names. They had to adopt Japanese names. As a matter of fact, a lot of my friends, that, you know, grandparents, they still speak Japanese because, you know, that's all they knew. They had Japanese last names. It was so bad that sometimes you're walking in front of a member of the imperial family. If you didn't bow very well, you could have your head beheaded. It was that bad then. So they had to take all of that back. And then the ongoing war, because the war never ended with North Korea. North Korea's GDP was actually higher than South Korea's GDP. This was as far back as 1945 and 19. People were like, what? I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But now Korea is, you know, it's light years ahead of its neighbor. The economy today now is more than 40 times larger than North Korea. So, and then they have that.
Why is so important.
Exactly. And, they, you know, the respect for family. No matter what, I tell people that even as I'm in the US right now, if my parents say come home, or so, like, I would just carry my things and go. Because you still have that respect for family. And for them, it's really deep, you know, because it's rooted in their Confucianism. Like, you cannot be the shepherd. Like, after God is your parents. That's how the order is.
Wow.
And they love food. We celebrate through food. Those Nigerians love food as well. So when I saw some of the similarities, you know, it helped me to stick more to it. And of course, there's some things about Korea that it still boggles my mind. Like, they have a very high rate of suicide. There's so much. The education system is cutthroat. I don't think I will survive as a Korean because the way they study so much, there's so much pressure to do well. There's competition. Wow. I took WAEC. My WAEC scores, they only compared me to people that were in my school. In Korea, you're compared to everybody in the nation.
Wow.
You have in the nation. And I think that's the thing we should accept about cultures. There's some good and bad things. You know, no culture is perfect. Even my Yoruba culture, there's some things that they're not good about. Not,
yeah.
So let's not say, oh, because Koreans are like that and Nigerians are like that and that means it's bad. No.
No, no.
And I think by exposing things and learning what we can take from other people's culture, I think that's what makes the world go around. And then that way we're improving on the process. So yes, for those that are learning, find your whys. Stick to it. Even when I gave up, I went back to it. I wanted to see it through. I went back to my whys. Yeah, and I'm glad
that's just about commitment. Like, it's just when you're doing anything in life, you have to be committed to it. Like, you know,
that's a very good point you made, Bisola, because the same commitment you're committing to washing dishes is the same thing that will apply to
language learning,
making sure you're writing that contract very well, learning language. Because the commonality there is yourself. How are you seeing things? Do you give up easily because you know it's hard?
And so then if you're the one that will even enjoy the benefits, do you get? So you're actually doing it for yourself, not even for anybody. You know, so when you maybe visit Korea, you know, maybe this year or next year, you're the one that is going to really enjoy. You're going to be communicating with Koreans and even getting some contracts and meeting people and enjoying all the opportunities that will come your way. Do you understand? So I think at the end of the day, you're doing it for yourself. So
for yourself.
When people tell me I don't have time to learn a language, I'm just wondering, like, if you can
speak this language. If you like it enough, you come in time.
If you can speak the language, it's for your own, you know, good and benefit. So do you have plans to learn similar languages like Japanese or Chinese? Like, can you share the top three languages on your language learning bucket list? That is if you have a language learning bucket list.
I started learning Japanese, but I realized I'm my brain has to like get to the point where I feel like I've mastered Korean enough. I think I'm almost getting there. Japanese and then, of course, Mandarin Chinese. Now, Chinese, if I do that, I feel like I can even run for American president, even though I won't definitely not win. I don't even qualify because I wasn't born here. Because it's a totally different beast. In Korean, you are looking at characters, which makes sense. In Mandarin, they're drawing characters. Like, you have to, for you to be proficient, you have to know 10,000 to be able to read. So it's symbols. It's not even just characters. It's stacks characters. Yeah. When your brain has to really be there, right?
And I know someone
of them at the same time. She's learning Japanese, Korean, and Chinese. And she's doing amazing.
Wow. We're
different. So I know my limitations. Once I see Korean to a particular level, I'm going to give myself 6 months, 1 more year. And then I will start with Japanese and then, you know, ease out into Korean, into Chinese. And I think the last one I really want to learn is will be Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
I like the way it rolls all the time. I like that, you know, not many countries in the world where it's, you know, really it's compared to like Spanish, you know, Portuguese is not as, you know, prevalent as Spanish.
So the top three languages on your list are, you know, Japanese, Chinese, and Portuguese, right?
In those orders, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say Pig Latin, but that was going to be me trying to make a joke about this.
Okay. So can you tell me about that time when your friends kept explaining to your other Korean friends that your name is Mo? That story, I really like that story, and I want you to share so that all of us can laugh. So it's no longer inside joke.
So a little bit of things I do here is, so I volunteer with an organization called Chi Alpha. It's a Christian organization. I used to be a member.
Okay.
I used to be one of the recipients. And what they do is they pair international students with those that live in America so as to help them have that. That's one of the things they do. They do many things, you know. To have that feel of home. And one of the things we do here is we go pick up, do airport pickups. So when students come in for the first time, we pick them up, we take them shopping for at Walmart, how to like, you know, use coupons. Basically, we're like trying to make them feel very comfortable. And then over time, we become like the host family. We take them, you know, eating together. They learn about our culture and our families and things like that. So that's a bit of a context for that. So one of the things I always do when I meet Korean students for the first time, they never really see it coming. I start speaking Korean and they just go, whoa, whoa, oh, no, hey, cute. Like, you know, they find it very cute. So on this occasion, I had, you know, I had about four students with me in my car. We're going to go to my house for a weekend. And we had, you know, bought groceries. Now, the three students I was familiar with, but then the fourth one, she didn't know who I was. Like, she knew about me, but it was my first time meeting her.
Okay.
And as I was driving, at the back of it, so she was sitting at the back. And then she asked the guy in Korean, she's like, what did you say her name was again? And she's like, Morago. And Morago, a little bit of a joke. And this was like my learning phase. That was when I learned to joke and I realized that, okay, I think I'm not as bad as I thought I was. And Morago is almost like a loop, because Morago is, what did you say? And okay. Then Morago means, so Morago here, she's called, this is someone called Mo. So it has a double meaning. Morago is, what did you just say to me right now? And then Morago is, even though the Morago is M-W-O, but the way Koreans would say it, it's going to sound like Morago.
Okay.
So the girl kept asking, what's her name? And the guy replied, Morago. And then
that means the guy meant your name is Mo, right?
Yeah, she's called Mo. That person called Mo. But then he shouts in Kolabi, Morago Saram. Like, that person called Mo. And then he goes, Morago? And I said, what she called? And then you kept going back and forth. And then the girl beside me in the car, the one in front, by my side, you know, the passenger sitting in front, you could tell that she was just dying laughing. Because she knew what was going on at the back. And then we started laughing. And then that's when I realized that, okay, Morago and Morago can, you know, sound similar. So yeah, that was a joke. I don't think it sounds funny because I've said it many times.
No, it sounds funny. It sounds funny. So Mo, you teach beginners, you know, the Korean language, right? So like,
yeah.
Have you ever had a student that found it difficult to learn? You know, what are your biggest challenges as an online Korean tutor for beginners?
I see a lot of them struggle the way I did. I can relate. And I always let them know, for you to want to learn Korean, it's not because you require it. A lot of Koreans come to the US to learn English. Wow. And it becomes very difficult for them. Yes. Because the way they are taught in Korean, especially when it comes to English, they teach them the grammar, they teach them how to write, but then the speaking part of it is very hard because they just know the words. They know how to, they can write beautifully well. They can compose stuff. But talking, you know, becomes very difficult. I think they're afraid of, you know, being fake. They're also afraid of sounding stupid. And I said, here I am, you know, this Yoruba girl with, you know, I'm about the tongue.
And are you from Ibadan?
I'm half Ibadan. My mom is Ibadan. My dad is on my call. My dad is a Korodo.
Okay, so because I'm from Ibadan. And I say, let it not be that we are cousins.
So. I'm half Ibadan. Who knows? We could be. You know. And so I always tell them, it's okay to sound stupid because you're learning it. You know, you can only sound stupid. You can sound stupid as many times as you want. Another thing is that they try to imitate how other people learn. Another thing I forgot to mention is this part of it. And I highly recommend to anybody listening, if you want to start taking a language, I think everybody should do, we should have done this when we were in school. Go look at the VARK. It's a website you can learn your learning style. A lot of us kind of know, in a way. Some people are like, you know, I can't photocopy anybody's notes because I'm not going to be able to read it. You have some students that they have to be in class and listen to the professor for them to be able to hear what they're saying and understand the content.
Yeah.
People have to be the ones to write their notes very well.
Everybody just has that, you know, their own different learning style. And I think it relates to your personality type as well. Because I did some research as regards that and I realized that, you know, personality types affect your, you know, language learning style as well. So it's important for us to know your language learning style. And not copy somebody's learning.
And not copy somebody.
Yes.
Copy somebody. I took the test. And if you're like me, I have a multimodal learning preference. What does that mean? I learn by hearing.
Okay.
I learn reading. By being visual.
Okay.
By reading or writing and by kinesthetic. So I'm balanced in all those other areas. But I think for me, visual was very strong. And also learning the first principles. Like, why are those words like that? Well, when you break it down, why are we using this particular phrase to add to that one? Mm-hmm. So find out your learning style. And that's what you do
for your students. You first of all, ask them to, you know.
I make them take that test.
Okay.
It's about maybe 5 minutes. 10, 12 questions. No, it's not 5 minutes, you know, unless you're taking your time to read everything. It just tells you, like, questions like, if I were to give you a directions to, like, to using a map, if I were to give you directions to a place, what version would, how would you like me to tell you? Is it to tell you or draw you a map or, you know, tell you, you know, go by the red marks, there's a red car. And then you start, we don't even really think about just how much we want to digest information and how much we want to pass information across to people. So that just helps you to find out where you stand. And then if you're like visual, you know that you need to see things. You need to have a book in front of you. See how it's broken down. Watch videos. If you are oral, like, you know, you hear by hearing, you understand by hearing, then, you know, listen to the podcast, hear people talk. There's some very smart people like that. Just by hearing people talk, they can pick up the language. Yes. I am not like that. If you're reading and writing, you know what? Let's just say, whether you're reading on the reading and writing skill, everybody needs to get a notebook. Get yourself. I have like 3 notebooks for Korean. Yes. I have used up 2. I have a 3rd one. I write Korean in my journal. Like,
you have a journal. I have a journal.
I have a bullet journal. I've been journaling since I was in secondary school. I still journal to today. And sometimes when I want to write things that I feel like it's very personal for me, I write it in Korean. And to me, because it's become more of an emotional language, I don't curse, except, you know, in very few cases. But I find myself cursing more in Korean when I'm driving and somebody like pulls up in front of me, or when I stop my tour and I say something in Korean. And I know that nobody around me can have that shock and awe as I was dropping the elbow, you know. So I'm learning the good and bad things about a language. So yes, find out your learning style. That's what I always tell my students, and take your time. You can't learn like Moon. Moon can learn like Minyoung. Minyoung can learn like, you know, Mojonga. But different people, take your time. Your time, let it evolve naturally. Because even as an English speaker, I don't know a lot of words in English.
Of course,
I learn now in English language is the big word to kind of impress people when I'm speaking.
Yeah.
There's no ending to my learning, whether it's Korean, English, or French. So why are you rushing yourself? Let it go organically. You know, take your time.
Time.
And be systematic about it.
About it.
Yeah.
Okay, so for someone who wants to take Korean classes with you, how can the person reach or contact you? Do you want to share your website?
You have to be very, very serious, you know, and it's okay. You can ask questions about, you know, what I use, that maybe follow up questions, but if you're really serious about it, then put my email there. I also have
okay. So I'll just put your website and your email in the description, of this.
Yes. Article. And I have a WhatsApp chat line.
Okay.
That I will send to you.
I'll include that.
Yeah.
As...
My Instagram is also there. I have a podcast. You can, you know, find me.
Yes, this is where I get to ask you to just tell us briefly about the Morsible podcast.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for that. So that also the Morsible podcast is a podcast I describe as a podcast for Blacks and Asians and those who love them. So why Black? Well, in the US here, we use this kind of terminology to delineate ourselves. But Blacks would be anyone that identifies with being Black. Whether from Africa, from the Caribbean, or you identify as one, come on board. Now, Asians is a homage to my Korean loving part of it. Because like I said earlier on, there's so many similarities. So that concept of sim-sim, but different. And then those who love them, there's a third component. So you don't have to be Black or Asian. You could also love the culture. You want to know more about, you know, why Black people do certain things. And when I say Black people, it's such a very watered-down term because we're so heterogeneous. We're so diverse, right? But some clusters of cultural expressions that we have. And so I always come from that place of cultural curiosity. So I have brought a lot of people on my show from several countries all over the world.
You have over 150 episodes now, right?
Actually, not up to 150, about 120 now.
Okay, 120. Okay.
You know, and I like to have conversations, even with people that I don't necessarily agree with. Because I feel like we're running at the danger of not being able to talk with people, you know, because I feel like if I can ask questions, then what's the point? All of my biases just stay in there and I start, you know, manifesting them. So I create a space for people to talk about contentious topics, about things we don't even talk about, things that are called taboo. Because I feel like when I can air my opinion, not like argue them out, I come from a place of learning from my guests to, you know, help me tease out some of the things that I know. So yeah, that's my process. I've explored miscarriages, infertility, mental health, cultural appropriation, cultural expression by culturalness. So those that, you know, one that blew my mind, her mom is Taiwanese, her dad is Ethiopian, and she's like the only one I've met in my life who, you know, has this two rich heritage. And I talked about her African and her Asian part, and you see that that's like double combo right there, you know. Yes. education, and you know, and so she helped walk me through that process of what that meant, holidays in Ethiopia, holidays in Taiwan with her mom's side of the family. So yes, that's my podcast. So if anybody's listening to this, go check out, you know, www.mosibyl.com. I'm also on Instagram as Morsibyl, MOSIBYL. And then my Instagram handle is The Most. I also have the one for the podcast, and it's The Morsibyl Podcast. Morsibyl. So yes, it's a weekly podcast. If you want to come share your story, I'd love sharing stories. So I welcome you aboard.
Oh,
that's amazing. You can also find us on iTunes and everywhere legal you can get podcasts on. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, anywhere.
Okay. So before you go more, do you love reading books? What's your favorite book, or what are you currently reading? And that's because, you know, the podcast is
called Languages and Books, but we talk more about the language aspect. I've not figured out how to include that book aspect into it. But so what I try to do is just ask my guests, okay, so what's your favorite book? What are you currently reading? Do you love books? Let's just infuse that book thing into it a bit.
Of course, I love books. I was always a voracious reader as a kid. I was that child who spent their break time doing in my headmistress office just reading books. But I started with them, you know, Enid Blyton's Famous Fives, and I graduated up to Pacesetters and James Hadley Chase. Don't tell my mom about the James Hadley Chase book. And then Mules and Bones, and then I still read books. I read them a lot. I try to do about 100 books a year.
Wow.
Not just because I'm trying to prove a point, but books still interest me. And even though I don't really have time to sit down and pick a book all the time, I do a lot of audiobooks as well to augment my reading.
Audiobooks, yeah. And I do audiobooks too.
I end up buying the books as well at the end of the day if I really like them. It's hard for me to answer that question about what my favorite book is.
Yes, it's always difficult for book lovers.
Asking what's your favorite music. But I'll say this, that, and not to sound very cheesy about it, I find the Bible very complete.
Okay.
You know, it's a book I still keep, you know, reading because it's very transformative. Now, apart from the Bible, I'll say I have some favorite writers, and that one of them will be C.S. Lewis.
Okay, I know C.S.
Lewis. I like how C.S. Lewis came at me at a time when I was struggling with my faith, especially the utility of it in a world that seems to tell you Jesus is not real.
Okay.
You know, and C.S. Lewis has been dead since 1963, I think thereabouts, but his books till today, they're still very relevant.
Very relevant.
You know, so when I went through a lot of personal struggles with losses and all of that, C.S. Lewis' book on Grief Observed and Problem with Pain, they helped me. When I was struggling with my faith and I left the faith and I thought, you know, I'm done with Christianity, his book on Screwtape Letters and Mere Christianity spoke words of life to me. Wow. And there was something he said, you know, I believe in Christianity like I believe in the sun, not because, and I'm roughly paraphrasing this, not because I see the sun, but because through the sun I see everything else. Wow. So I think moving to the US, where I'm being in a very highly academic and professional setting, where sometimes the talks about religion are not really welcome, or they're not even allowed in a way. And talking to people who don't even believe in anything that you believe in, you start thinking like, why do I ever need God? You know, everything seems to be working for me. Having to be more bold, I think I became very bold about my faith when I moved to the US after I gone through my crisis of, you know, faith and all that. And there's so many writers like C.S. Lewis that helped me with that.
Wow.
Another person was Ravi Zacharias of Blessed Memory. He passed on earlier this year. His books on apologetics were really, really good. And Nabil Qureshi. And so those are my top writers.
Top writers.
Wow. Now, there's some other books that I like by other writers. One of them is Anne Lamott. A-N-N-E-L-A-M-M-O-T.
Okay.
She is a writer for writers. Anne Lamott, her book on birds, by birds, anyone that struggles with writing or even trying to put words together, you need to go read that book.
Okay.
Her books on grace, hallelujah. And this is where she talks about the human condition and the things she's gone through. That you look at her, you're like, man, I love her. I love how she writes. I love how she's, and I spelled her name wrong, L-A-M-O-T-T. Almost everything, small victories, hallelujah anyways, Teaches is really good. She's very vulnerable. When I was still struggling to talk about myself and things I've gone through as a child, my daddy issues and all of that kind of stuff, there's something she said, like, you own everything that happened to you. Tell your story.
You own everything.
People want that, you own everything that happens to you. And I'm paraphrasing it. Tell your story. If people didn't want you to write about them, they should have been nicer to you. Something like that. That became like the running theme in my life. Like, I will own my story. Like, I always say that there's still the other side, person's side of the story, right? But this is my story. This is how I perceived it.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking to my story. I might be wrong about how I perceived it, but this is my perception of things. And what's wrong with that? Nothing. So Anne Lamott gave me that. I remember it was 2017. And that's when I just turned. I was like, I'm sharing everything. My life is going to be an open book. I want people to learn from it. Even the things that make me, that cast me in a bad light as a villain, I'm going to share it because that's my story. Those are my mistakes. So yes, what am I currently reading right now? I'm reading Breath of Korean Cool by Yuri Hung. I'm reading How to Be a Stoic by Massimo Piglucci. And then I have a Christian book that we're reading through Fellowship. It's on Discipleship, and it's by Greg Laurie, and it's called Start to Follow. So those are the three books I'm reading right now.
Wow. Wow, wow. This has been a very insightful conversation, Mo. Now, I'm already thinking of adding Korean to my language learning bucket list. There you go. What do you think?
It's okay. Do it. Do it. That's a Korean word for hera. Do it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mutelani, for being a guest on the Languages and Books podcast. Thank you for coming on the show. How do you say thank you in Korean?
It depends. So are you older than me or am I older than you?
You're older than me, obviously.
Okay, so I'll just say, if you want to say it to me, you say, komawoyo.
Ah.
Oni is, so another thing about Korean, it's depending on the gender. There's a way you can call big sister, big brother, depending on who's talking. So since it's female to female, you can call me Onni. And it's spelled E-O-N-N-I, Onni. That's the romanization. Or you can do U-N-N-I. And then Komawoyo is G-O-M-A-W-O-Y-O, Komawoyo. And I'll put someone, Onni, podcast, why did you just say Komawoyo? But you don't have to worry about the middle part. Just Onni Komawoyo, and I'll take it.
Okay, let me just say okay. because that's like, you know, another session. another learning session on its own. But I'm really excited that, you know, you agreed to come on the show. And I'm really excited that you were able to talk about how you learned Korean language and culture, everything. I'm really excited about that. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Priscilla, for inviting me. I love to talk about this. And so when we connected through Stephanie, so shout out to Stephanie.
Yes.
I deeply appreciate you helping me, you know, talk about this on a Monday morning. So to really show my heartfelt gratitude to you, I'm going to say it in Korean. Thank you for the invitation. And it was really lovely to chat with you. And I love what you're doing. It's why I came on the show. And so please keep this going, talking about languages and books and your Facebook group as well. I think it's fantastic. And the world needs more of that. So keep it up, Bisola.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, so remember, if you want to learn another language, start now, practice daily, and don't stop. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. If you haven't joined the Languages and Books private community on Facebook, what are you waiting for?